Jersey TV.
Yeah, you heard the one about the Mexican firefighter then? No? Oh yeah, there's a Mexican firefighter, had two sons. He named his first son, Jose. What did he name his second son? Jose B. Good morning, everybody. Martin Sender here. Starting the week, linked below is the video published yesterday. Another Rodney Paris, Martin Sender, 1-2 punch. This one is about, yes, what is it about? This one is a follow-up to the video published last week. I hope you watched that one. A dear friend, a believer since deceased, named Bud McDivitt, gave his testimony when he was really in a Job-like series of experiences. And from the trench, he made a really powerful video about faith and about how it comes from God and God alone. This is a follow-up. I gave a talk in October of 1997 in Fairview, South Carolina, called Spiritual Bodies and Fish. If you're intrigued by that title, you should be. Go down there. If you haven't watched it already, it's about these bodies of humiliation and how we're constantly having to maintain them. Constant work, constant stress. If you let yourself go, you will go. It's just a struggle. The analogy I draw is Israel having to pay her own temple tax. You see, properly, the nations were supposed to bring their tributes to Israel. It's an insult to have to maintain your own temple, but that's the tax that Jesus asked Peter about, or that the Pharisees asked Peter about. Does your master pay the temple tax, otherwise known as the double drachma tax? I'm drawing an analogy. I won't go any further. I have to leave you in a little bit of suspense, so watch that video. I thank you for your responses on Friday's video. It was just one of those days. And I guess misery loves company. Your responses were heartfelt and genuine. And I always try to be genuine with you. I don't even have to try. It just comes naturally to me. So it's just a constant suffering here on this planet with a few moments of respite, coffee, God help you if you can't sleep, but a good night's sleep is a wonderful respite. But then for some people, God takes away their sleep and he wrecks their sleep and they have insomnia. It's just one thing after another. You're going to get vexed and poked because it's all about the contrast, but we're going to be delivered soon. Now, I've been promising you the Hosea passage. I'll continue on just a little bit with the spiritual Israel replacement theology deception here. I do want to finish what I started there. I'm going to quote now from Romans 9, verses 25 through 33. Romans 9, starting with verse 25. As he is saying in Hosea also, I shall be calling those who are not my people, my people, and she who is not beloved, beloved. And it shall be in the place where it was declared to them, not my people are you, there they shall be called sons of the living God. Now there's a heavy-duty quote starting in verse 27 from Isaiah, who's crying over Israel. I don't know if I'm going to get to that, but I really don't want to emphasize that part. It's this. I will be calling those who are not my people, my people, and she who is not beloved, beloved. Why is Paul bringing this up? There are two reasons Paul is bringing this up. The first one is that, of course, the nations, and here he's writing to the Romans, would have deduced, logically so, that because Israel's kingdom had not come, because Israel brought a curse on themselves for crucifying their own Messiah, and that now blessings have come to the nations based on Israel's apostasy, the normal conclusion would be, well, I guess God's done with Israel. So Paul embarks Romans 9, 10, and 11 on a detailed explanation concerning Israel. He gets into the sovereignty of God. Has to touch on that because the thing looks like a mess. Unless God is sovereign, he can't sort all the pieces out. But Paul assures the Romans that it's only part of Israel that is apostate. It's the majority, yes. Actually, it's more accurate to say a part of Israel remains faithful. This is known as the remnant. This is what Isaiah was talking about. Paul's going to quote the great prophet Isaiah soon here. But Paul's main thrust, I think, was to prove that God was not done with Israel. Second of all, Paul actually has precedent to call upon to prove to his countrymen that he's not so crazy in being called the apostle of the nations or the apostle to the nations, the guy taking a different evangel to people who are non-Israelites. Of course, the Israelites at the time did not understand this. They were okay with the nations coming in because they knew eventually the nations had to come in, the Abrahamic covenant. Through you and your seed, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. But it's through you. That's the whole thing. Israel as a priesthood. Israel was okay, sort of, with other nations coming in, but only if they were the priesthood. What Paul did and what God did through Paul was eliminate the priesthood. Israel, no longer a go-between in this evangel of the grace of God. And see, there's one of the big differences between the two gospels. People tell me there's only one gospel. No. One gospel uses Israel as a priesthood nation. You're a royal priesthood, said Peter to these people, and that is Israel. And even though they're in apostasy now, but it's not a permanent condition, read Romans 11, they're still a priestly people. They're still going to be used when God inaugurates the new covenant. They're still going to be used to bring all the nations to God on the earth. That has to happen or God's a liar. You see, God is faithful concerning his promises. And then there's another gospel, the gospel of the grace of God, where Israel is, again, set aside. We don't need Israel. We don't need a priest. We go directly to God. Ooh, but see, since Paul has this helpful verse to show his countrymen, see, it's not so crazy when God says, I'm calling those who are not my people, my people. See? God once considered Israel, Paul says to his countrymen. God once called Israel not my people. So what's the difference between Israel in a not my people state and these people who are literally not his people? What's the difference, Paul said? There's a common denominator here, whether you're of the stock of Abraham or not, and that is not my people. And so Paul is really cleverly using this verse as recourse for the justification of his gospel going out to non-Israelites. Paul needed all the help he can get. But because Paul's doing this, then illicit people today, the preterists, the replacement theology people, they misconstrue this. They take it out of context and they say, okay, he's calling those who are not my people, my people. And the way Paul's looking at it is they're my people in a new sense in that God is bringing the nations a new evangel with a new destination, heaven instead of earth. They're not becoming Israelites. They're not being tied into the Israelite message. It's just, remember, in a metaphor, there's just one point of contact. And the point of contact for Paul was, okay, what's the difference between not my people of Israelite stock and not my people of non-Israelite stock? That would have driven Israel crazy. But his point was not that the Jews somehow became Israel, that the Greeks somehow became Israelites, or that they adopted Israelite practices, or that they, you know, began doing the law or anything like that. Absolutely ridiculous. Paul's not doing that. So many believe that the nations to whom Paul writes in Romans are a fulfillment of the Hosea prophecy. They think they're fulfilling this prophecy. But actually, this is what they think in their minds. The belief goes like this. The nations, those who are non-Israelites, magically fulfill the prophecies that God made to Israel when Israel rejected her Messiah. You see, God couldn't consummate his promises to the literal seed because of their frustrating disobedience. You got to feel sorry for God here. He didn't realize how frustrating it would be. He didn't understand how stubborn Israel would be. So he developed a very clever plan B. God did, in order to jockey around this unforeseen roadblock. God forsakes the covenant people. This is according to the replacement theology people and the preterist. God forsakes the covenant people, sends the Israel message to heathen who are not his people, i.e. Greeks. And then by a dandy little piece of alchemy and genetic daring do, I might add, turns the non-Israelites into his people. There's a name for this science fiction. And the name is replacement theology. Replacement theology states, I'm paraphrasing it here, that God is finished with the descendants of Abraham and has replaced them with blacks from New Jersey, Mexicans, Brazilians, all manner of Europeans, including Frenchmen, basically anybody who can manage to believe in Jesus. Ah, boom, you're Israel. Another name for this deception is spiritual Israel. But as I told you last week, spiritual Israel is the nation Israel being spiritual, as opposed to fleshly Israel, which is the nation Israel being fleshly. Always concerns the nation of Israel. Pentecostals, they really gravitate toward this popular mistake because they like the idea of Israel-style miracles. They like seeing angels. They wish Gabriel would talk to them. He's so handsome, Gabriel is. They want to talk to Gabriel because he's just one of the most popular celestial messengers that ministers to Israel. How a band of religious people, speaking of the preterists now, how this band of religious people doubting, this is what it comes down to, doubting God's ability to deliver upon his ancient promises. How these people can consider themselves spiritual, anything. Spiritual Israel? You don't even believe God's promises to Israel. How about non-spiritual Israel? How about stupid Israel? How could you possibly be in the dark after Paul writes Romans 11 and explains everything to you, Israel? All right, that's the fiction. Here's the fact. The fact of this matter is that God inspired Paul to use Israel as an example of how he has reached out before, see, to those who are not my people. True, the not my people of this context from the Hosea prophecy, I'll talk about that a little bit, are still Israelites. See, they were still Israelites, but they were in such a divorced state that they may well have been. They just as well might have been Mexicans or blacks from New Jersey or whatever examples I gave. They might as well have been Mexicans because they were absolutely disobedient, unfaithful, and they prostituted themselves. In fact, the Hosea prophecy comes from the prophet Hosea. That's why they call me the world's most outspoken Bible scholar. I make sense for a living. God told Hosea to take a wife of harlotry. Thou shalt marry a prostitute. And Hosea says, which one? God said, I'll pick one, anyone. So he picks one named Gomer. Well, hey, Sergeant Cart, not that Gomer. And he married her, and their third child was named Sergeant Carter. No, their third child was named Lo-Ami, which means not my people. So God was conducting an extravagant demonstration that just as Hosea married a harlot, a prostitute, thus God had married a harlot, a prostitute, the nation Israel, and then he divorces them, but it's only temporary. Hosea sends Gomer away into another barracks. But then later, in Hosea, I think chapter 3 or something, he takes her back. And that's another example that God is going to take back faithless, prostituting Israel. So I have a suspicion that being aware of the Jews in his audience as he's writing Romans, because there are some, Paul attempted to convince them of the legitimacy of his work. The nations didn't really care how the blessings came, only that they were now the newest apples of God's eye. That's all they cared about. I believe that Paul probably would have, gently nudge his fellow Israelites, as I said before, and say, see, what's so strange about God calling a non-people his people? And that would have irritated them, because basically Paul is saying, you can be a not my people and be of the blood of Abraham, and you can be a not my people and be a Mexican. What difference does it make? Paul would have said. And then those who are called not my people, there shall they be called sons of the living God. Paul then is using it in a new way. For the Hosea, it was used to say that God is going to bring Israel back into the fold and fulfill his promises to them. But Paul hijacks the verse, uses it for his own purpose. And in Paul's mind, they shall be called sons of the living God. In his mind now, those are the not my people, that is, those from the literal nations, becoming sons and daughters of God through a new evangel. Paul's very clever here. See, he's hijacking this verse and reapplying it. His main point was, not my people, what's the difference? What is the freaking difference? To paraphrase Paul, what's so strange about God calling a non-people his people? He's already done it, and he will do it with the Greeks. Winding up here, verse 10, and it shall be in the place where it was declared to them, not my people are you, there they shall be called sons of the living God. There you go. That's the whole point. This was God symbolically divorcing Israel for their chasing after other deities, i.e. their prostitutions. This will not be the end of the story, though, as I said, because where it was said, not my people, it will be said of them, sons of the living God. Basically, this is God pulling another Romans 11:32 stunner, where he locks up altogether in stubbornness in order to have mercy on all, on the same all. He divorces all, you see, God locks up altogether in stubbornness, and then he brings them back, remarries them. It's all about the contrast. The joy that comes on the heels of deliverance from jerkdom, or let's be scriptural, from being locked up in stubbornness. It's a beautiful thing. So the nations are not a fulfillment. The nations today are not a fulfillment of the Hosea prophecy, but rather they're an illustration of it. Sorry, spiritual Israelites, those who want to call themselves spiritual Israelites, you're only a metaphor. You're only a metaphor. I know that disappoints many of you. The first six words of this key passage should seal the deal. And really, the first word ought to suffice. Paul says, as he is saying in Hosea, as. See, the presence of the word as tells us that the nations to whom Paul is writing are an illustration, an example of God calling non-people people, but not the thing itself. These aren't literal Israelites. But in one particular aspect, being not God's people, they are as Israel. We find the literal fulfillment of the thing itself, that is the Hosea 1:10 prophecy, not in New Jersey, but in Hosea chapter 2, verse 23, when the prophet writes, then I will sow her for myself in the land, and I will say to Lo-Ami, which means not my people, that third child of Hosea and the harlot, I shall say to Lo-Ami, my people are you. And he shall say, Yahweh, my Elohim, are you? Isn't that going to be a beautiful thing? It is Lo-Ami, not my people, in the land of Israel, who will say, Yahweh, my Elohim, are you? Not some Frenchman living in Nice.